Lenin was the leader of the communist Bolshevik movement in Russia. At that time, Russia was reigned by the royal Tsarist regime led by the family of Romanov. Lenin's Bolsheviks movement were trying to bring down the Tsarist regime by force of arms. The chaos of World War I gave the Bolsheviks the opportunity they had been seeking. With Lenin at their head, the communists seized power by the use of arms in October 1917. After the revolution, Russia was the scene of a bloody 3-year civil war between communists and the supporters of the Tsar. Communists killed everyone they believed to be their opponents, including the family of the Tsar. Like his mentors, Marx and Engels, Lenin was also a fervent evolutionist, and often stressed that Darwin's theory was the fundamental basis of the dialectic materialist philosophy he advocated. Leon Trotsky counted as the most important architect of the Bolshevik Revolution after Lenin. Trotsky, as did Lenin, attached great importance to Darwinism. He declared his admiration for Darwin in the following way.
The discovery by Darwin was the highest triumph of the dialectic in the whole field of organic matter.
Following Lenin's death in 1924, Joseph Stalin, widely regarded as the bloodiest dictator in the history of the world, passed to the leadership of the Communist Party. Throughout his 30 years in power, Stalin would try to prove just what a ruthless system communism was. Stalin's first important move was to take over the fields of the peasants who made up 80% of the population of Russia. In the name of this policy of collectivization, which was intended to do away with private property, armed officials collected all the Russian villagers' crops, and as a result, there was a terrible famine. Millions of women, children, and elderly people could find nothing to eat, ended their lives rising in hunger. 20% of the population of Kazakhstan died of hunger. The death toll in Caucasia alone was 1 million. Stalin sent hundreds of thousands of people who tried to resist this policy to Siberia's dreadful labor camps. These camps, where prisoners were worked to death, became the grave of many. On the other hand, tens of thousands of people were executed by Stalin's secret police. Millions of people were forced to migrate to the furthest corners of Russia, including the Crimean and Turkestan Turks. By these bloody policies, Stalin killed some 20 million people. Historians have revealed that it gave him great pleasure to sit at his desk in the Kremlin and examine the lists of those who had died in the concentration camps or who had been executed. Apart from his personal psychological state, the main influence which led him to become such a ruthless killer was the materialist philosophy he believed in. In Stalin's own words, the fundamental basis of this philosophy was Darwin's theory of evolution. He explained the importance he attached to Darwin's ideas.
We must teach one thing to remove the idea of creation from the young mind.
One important indication of Stalin's blind faith in the theory of evolution was the Soviet education system's rejection of Mendel's genetic laws in the period when he came to power. These laws, which had been accepted by the whole world of science since the start of the 20th century, denied Lamarck's claim that acquired characteristics can be passed on to later generations. The Russian scientist, Lysenko, saw this as a heavy blow to the theory of evolution, and at the same time, a great danger. Stalin was impressed by Lysenko's ideas and made him head of the official scientific associations. Thus, genetic science, which discredited Darwinian evolution, was not accepted in any Soviet Union scientific association or school until Stalin's death. Anarchy and terror are two of Marxism and communism's indispensable tools. Marxism's tendency towards terrorism and violence appeared in the experiment of the Paris Commune while Marx was still alive. In particular, terrorism became an indispensable part of communist ideology with Lenin. while he was making Marx's theory a practicality. Communists spilt the blood of millions of people in every part of the world and made people undergo pain, fear, and violence by establishing terrorist organizations. No matter how much some communists claim that violence and terrorism are not communist practices, and that they only took place in some remote applications of communism, and no matter how much they try to whitewash communism, there is an undeniable truth. The founders of communism personally defended violence and terrorism and saw them as essential to their ideology. The American political scientist Samuel Francis also stated that Marx and Engels always defended that revolution came about by force. They insist that revolutionists have to use force against the dominant power.
Revolution is as much war as war.
Speaking at a workers' meeting, Lenin gave a terrifying statement of how indispensable terrorism was to them.
We must be amazed at how they have been able to forget even the simplest Marxist principles. If groups will not rise up of their own accord, we can achieve nothing. So long as we do not wage terror against the speculators, so long as we do not put a bullet in their head, we will get nowhere.
One of the most important leaders of the October Revolution in Russia, Trotsky, says this to confirm Lenin's words.
But revolution demands the revolutionary class use all the methods at its disposal to achieve its ends. If necessary, with an armed uprising. If necessary, with terrorism.
These principles of such communist theoreticians as Lenin and Trotsky were put into practice in the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. During the revolutionary period of autumn 1917, there began wide-ranging massacres, looting, and unbelievable violence. Those people who were against the revolution, or who were suspected of being against the revolution, were rounded up, arrested, and shot. Houses were looted and wrecked. Terrorism, which began with Lenin and Trotsky, continued and grew worse in the Stalin years. Harrison E. Salisbury from the New York Times made this comment on the Soviet system's prison camps.
A whole continent of terror, compared with those who brought about the hundreds of thousands of executions and the millions of deaths in the Soviet terror system, the Tsars seem almost benign. Our minds boggle at the thought of a systemized, routine evil under which 3 or 4 million men and women were sentenced each year to forced labor and external exile, and in a manner so casual that the prisoners often were not even told what their sentences were.
Non-Russian peoples, and particularly the Crimean Turks, the Central Asian Turks, and the Kazakhs, were exposed to the terrorism of the Soviet system. Special courts, troikas, were established to cleanse Russian society of the Kazakhs. In October 1920 alone, these troikas sentenced more than 6,000 people to death. The families, and sometimes even the neighbors of those who opposed the regime and were not apprehended, were systematically taken hostage and sent to concentration camps. Martin Latsis, the head of one of these camps in the Ukraine, admitted that these were death camps in one of his reports.
The hostages gathered at a camp near Makop, women, children, and the elderly, are living covered in mud and in dreadful conditions in the October cold. They are dying like flies. The women are prepared to do anything not to die. The soldiers charged with protecting the camp are taking advantage of this situation to trade in these women.
Under the influence of Darwin, the communist revolutionaries were killing people in a crazed manner. It appears from documents of the time that the sole aim was total extermination. It was as if they believed that the more people they killed, the greater success they would have. They planned to wipe out everybody suspected of being against the revolution, and revealed in one of their decisions,
the Pyatorsky Chekhas, Extraordinary Committee for War Against the Counter-Revolution, launched a frenzy of arrests and execution. The Pyatorsky Chekhas decided to execute 300 people in one day. Quotas were drawn up from Pyatorsky City and the small town around it. Party organizations were ordered to prepare the execution lists. For want of a better idea, they decided the people in the hospital should be killed.
As was announced in the lead article of the newspaper Krasny Mek, The communists saw everything as permissible and believed that blood had to be spilled for the color of the red flag to come about.
Everything is permitted for us because we draw our swords not to oppress and enslave mankind, but to free it from its chains. Blood? Let it flow in streams, because only blood can permanently paint the black pirate flag of the bourgeoisie, the color of the red flag, the standard of the revolution. Because only the death of the old world can permanently save us from the return of the jackals.
As well as all this torture, Stalin set up compulsory collection units to take the peasants' produce by force. These units were responsible for all kinds of oppression. On February the 14th, 1922, an inspector wrote the following.
The unjust practices of the compulsory collection units have reached unbelievable proportions. Arrested villagers are systematically locked into cold hangars, beaten with whips and threatened with death. They tie the hands and arms of those who are unable to meet their quotas and make them run naked the length of the main village street. Then they are pushed into a cold hangar. A large number of women are beaten until they faint, and then they are put naked into holes in the snow.
Stalin believed that Spain represented opportunities for the USSR. For that reason, he took sides and supported the communists in the Spanish Civil War. But with that, the terrorism in the USSR overflowed into Spain. One example of the oppression and torture there was the concentration camp that 200 anti-Stalinists were held in at the beginning of 1938. One of the detainees who survived described the camp in this way.
When the Stalinists wanted to form a Czech there, we were cleaning a small graveyard. The Czechists had a devilish idea. The graveyard was left as it was, with the open graves, with its skeletons and its new corpses which were beginning to rot. And they buried the most intractable inmates there all night long. And even worse, torches were practiced. Many prisoners were hung upside down by their feet for days on end. And it made it difficult for others to breathe. They were locked in narrow cupboards with few air holes open at face level. There was even a rougher method of torture, called the drawer. Prisoners were forced into closed chests and made to stay in their position for days. Some of them remained for 8 to 10 days without moving.
In 1931, Pope Pius XI had this to say about the violence communism had inflicted on the world in his bull Quadragesimo Anno.
Communism teaches and seeks two objectives: unrelenting class warfare and absolute extermination of private ownership. Not secretly or by hidden methods does it do this, but publicly, openly, and by employing every and all means, even the most violent. To achieve these objectives, there is nothing which it does not dare, nothing for which it has respect or reverence. And when it has come to power, it is incredible and portent like in cruelty and inhumanity. The horrible slaughter and destruction through which it has laid waste vast regions of Eastern Europe and Asia are the evidence.
Communism's principal aims were a merciless class war and the complete doing away with private property. In other words, the aim was to apply the theory of evolution, which Darwin had applied in the biological field to human societies, and for human beings to be like wild animals in nature, in conflict and at war. The disasters brought about by communism did not stop in Russia. One of the country's worst hit was China. In China, after a long civil war, the communists seized power under the leadership of Mao Zedong in 1949. Mao established a bloody and repressing regime just like his ally Stalin, who provided great support to him. During the following years, young militants of Mao called Mao's Red Army threw the country into a state of complete terror. Mao explained the philosophical basis of his order by explicitly stating that
The basis of Chinese socialism relies on Darwin and the theory of evolution.
Mao fought a long guerrilla war until 1949. He used the rural terrain to organize an insurrection against the central government, which was ruling in the big cities. To do this, he had to establish good relations with the peasants. He promised them that they would achieve happiness and welfare when communist China was established. Believing in his promises, peasants supported him and his guerrillas. However, things changed drastically after Mao came to power. In the first years of the revolution, Mao committed himself to establishing his rule across entire China and making the communist authority predominant in all provinces. In the middle of the 1950s, Mao entertained visions similar to Stalin's collectivization policy. In 1958, this plan was put into effect. Mao called the project the Great Leap Forward. The project, however, only brought want and torture to his people. Under the banner of increasing production by abolishing private ownership, the peasants were forced to collectivize their fields. Requisitioning detachments of Stalin's Russia were repeated. Peasants of some regions of China were punished by starvation for their reluctance towards Mao's collectivization policies. The Great Leap Forward shortly turned into a great famine. This was an artificial famine similar to Stalin's artificial famine in the Ukraine. In the Black Book of Communism, China during the Great Leap Forward was described as
"The fact that famine was primarily a political phenomenon is demonstrated by the high death rates in provinces where the leaders were Maoist radicals, provinces that in previous years had actually been net exporters of grain."
Party activists in Henan were convinced that all the difficulties arose from the peasants' concealment of private stocks of grain. According to the secretary of the Yingjia district, which had 10 million inhabitants, and where the first people's commune in the country had been established,
"The problem is not that food is lacking. There are sufficient quantities of grain, but 90% of the inhabitants are suffering from ideological difficulties."
In the autumn of 1959, the class war was momentarily forgotten, and a military-style offensive was launched against the peasants, using methods very similar to those used by anti-Japanese guerrilla groups. At least 10,000 peasants were imprisoned, and many died of hunger behind bars. The order was given to smash all privately owned cutlery that had not yet been turned to steel. Even fires were banned, despite the approach of winter. The excesses of repression were terrifying. Thousands of detainees were systematically tortured, and children were killed and even boiled and used as fertilizer. At the very moment when a nationwide campaign was telling people to learn the Henan way, in Anhui, where the stated intention was to keep the red flag flying even if 90% of the population died, cadres returned to the traditional practices of live burials and torture with red-hot irons. The notes of a Western observer who was passing by a Chinese village during the Great Leap Forward described the cruel and savage side of Maoism.
Shone on the jade green weeds that sprung up between the earth walls, accentuating the contrast with the rice fields all around, and adding to the desolation of the landscape. Before my eyes, among the weeds, rose up one of the scenes I had been told about, one of the banquets of which the families had swapped children in order to eat them. I could see the worried faces of the families as they chewed the flesh of each other's children. The children who were chasing butterflies in a nearby field seemed to be the reincarnation of the children devoured by their parents. I felt sorry for the children, but not as sorry as I felt for their parents. What had made them swallow that human flesh, amidst the tears and grief of other parents? Flesh that they would never have imagined tasting, even in their worst nightmares. In that moment, I understood what a butcher he had been. The man whose, like humanity, has not seen in several centuries, and China not in several thousand years. Mao Zedong, Zedong, Zedong.
The famine that struck China between 1958 and 1961, because of the Great Leap Forward policy of Mao, is accepted to be the greatest and most deadly famine in history. The death toll from the famine was around 40 million. What kind of a mentality then underlies these policies, forcing people to commit incomprehensible savagery? Mao's Great Leap Forward trial was a kind of natural selection test. Mao forced the Chinese people to the heaviest conditions possible, thus electing the weak and the opponents of communism. On the other hand, he was trying to brainwash the peasants with famine and make them subjects to himself and the communist regime. The ideological basis of this movement lied in Darwinism. Unsurprisingly, during the Great Leap Forward, Mao also started an education program in which dialectic material and Darwinism had the leading role. The communist ideology that stained the world with blood for 150 years has always been interconnected with Darwinism. Today, communists are still the foremost advocates of Darwinism. In almost all countries, the advocates of the theory of evolution have primarily been Marxists. That is simply because, as Karl Marx said,
the theory of the evolution contains a basis in natural history for communist ideology.
Stalin's demolition of dozens of churches and mosques is just one indication of communism's hatred of religion. In his book, Soviet Marxism and Natural Science, David Jurafsky describes the link in this way.
The enmity communism and materialism had for religion showed itself in all of its violence during the Bolshevik uprising and after. Churches and mosques were knocked down. Despite the fact that most of society was religious, people were obstructed from carrying out their religious duties. In order to take Sundays when Christians went to church out of the equation, the concept of a common day of rest was removed. Everyone would work 5 days, but the day of rest could be at any day. The communists thought that this precaution would facilitate the war to eradicate religion completely.
Following that, in 1928 and 1930, the taxes paid by men of religion were raised 10 times. Their food coupons were taken from them, and they could no longer use the health services. They were often arrested, moved from their posts, and sent into exile. By 1936, some 65% of mosques and 70% of churches had been destroyed. Some of the most violent measures against religion were taken in Albania. The communist leader of Albania, known for having no religion, was Enver Hoxha, who in 1967 proclaimed Albania the first religionless country. Men of religion would be taken into custody for no reason, and some of them were killed while in custody. In 1948, 2 bishops and 5,000 men of religion were shot. The country's Nendori newspaper announced that 2,169 mosques and churches had been closed down. All these practices were, beyond a shadow of a doubt, a communist's aim of forming societies which would blindly deny the existence of God and have nothing to do with religion. A society which would only believe in and value material things. This was communism's primary aim. The communist leaders knew that they could only govern as they wished if the people became like machines, insensitive, unfeeling, and most important of all, godless. In this way, they could make them carry out as many killings and as much oppression as they wanted. The claims of Darwinism, which gave support to atheism, which justified all kinds of oppression, cruelty, conflict and killing, encouraged in this way all the ideologies of the 20th century, which spilt blood and counted human life as valueless. Darwinism was advanced a century ago. Since then, its legacy to humanity is only brutal dictators, racism, and wars. This is merely the natural outcome from the point of view of Darwinism and materialism towards humanity. It is inevitable that this philosophy, which accepts human beings as soulless animal species, only putting its faith in matter and believing that struggle is an unchanging rule of nature, creates brutal individuals and societies. The main reason of all these unfavorable ongoings is man's denial of his own creator, a society turning his back to God. Being drifted by deceitful ideologies like materialism, becomes prone to all forms of relapse. In our day, many scientists, politicians, and men of ideas, whether aware or not of Darwinism's dark face, lend their support to this dogma. If everyone comes to know the scientific invalidity of this theory, which acts as inspiration for cruel dictators, ruthless, inhuman, and self-centered mentalities. It will spell the end of these harmful ideologies. Once the idea of Darwinism, the root of harmful ideologies, is finally overturned, only one truth will remain. That is the truth that God created all human beings and the universe. People who understand this will also realize that the only reality and the only truth lies in the holy book God sent down to us. When a large majority of people come to realize this truth, the pains, troubles, massacres, disasters, injustices, and poverty in the world will be replaced by enlightenment, openness, wealth, plenty, health, and abundance. For this, every false idea harmful to humanity must be intellectually conquered and dismantled by the supreme holy idea, which will bring beauty and splendor to mankind. Transcended from theory to actual fact. In the post-Darwinian era, it stands unchallenged and unbroken. Until now. Join us as we deconstruct the theory of evolution. The History of the Bible. Join Halakha Media as we explore the complete history of one of the world's most popular books. Coming soon. Highly controversial nature of this project, the actual topic will only be made available on the day of release.